Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is Seth Green, and you are listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark, and I am so hot, I would desperately like a glass of water. Please, please, give me some water.
This is Cindy Preston, and I'm with Mark on Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Melissa Peterman from CMT's The Singing Bee and the television show Reba, and I have to tell you, I just have to get it off my chest, I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi there. This is Faith Roscoe from General Hospital. You're listening to Mark on Somewhere in Vegas. And you better watch out. We know how to find you if you're not listening.
Hi, this is Shannon Egan from Whippet, and I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hey, this is Lee Allen Baker with Somewhere in Vegas, talking with Mark with a Q.
This is Courtney Cronin. You're listening to Somewhere in Vegas with your host, Mark, and I would make sure to listen every week because he's a sure bet.
Hey, this is the Money Man, Eddie Money. I got two tickets to Paradise, and it's, you know what? It's Somewhere in Vegas. And what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Hi, this is Crystal Kale, and I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Terry Nunn from Berlin, and you're listening to Mark Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Miracle Lori from Joss Whedon's Dollhouse. There are three flowers in a vase, and I'm listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Erin Hill, and you are listening to Mark on Blog Talk Radio and Somewhere in Vegas. Mark is a great guy.
Hi, this is Sean Pulaski. I'm still trying to figure out Mark Pico's sexuality, but I know you're listening to Somewhere Live in Vegas.
Here you go, Mark. I'm sorry. I thought you were she. I'm sorry. Get out of the tent. Let's get out of here.
Hey, this is Lance and Anna from Free Radio. And Anna?
And you're listening to Somewhere in Vegas.
Yes.
My favorite.
You know, that's usually what happens with me. I go to Vegas and I get lost, and so I end up somewhere in Vegas.
Somewhere in Vegas.
But right. I just don't know where it is.
Not quite sure.
Yeah, word.
Get ready. It's going to be hot. It's in Vegas. Check out Mark. Be there or be square.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in Vegas here on blogtalkradio.com. I am Mark the Q. I'm your host. I am very excited. First of all, we're going to get our co-host in, an MMA fighter as well as a very talented singer-songwriter. Chelsea Ray, are you there? Hold on 1 second here, Chelsea. I will get you online first here. Are you there, Chelsea?
I am. How y'all doing?
How's everything going with you?
It's awesome. Everything's going great.
Oh, good. Great. You're still in Louisiana, I'm assuming.
That's right.
Well, that's great to hear. And we'll kind of kick off things real quick. First of all, we have our first guest on the line. He is a very talented race car driver. Helms his own team, and he has a really unbelievable story in terms of how successful and how he got to the point where he's a very established businessman as well as a very accomplished race driver. We're on with Justin Peck. How you doing, Justin?
I'm doing good, brother. How about you?
I'm doing great. You know, tell us a little bit about now you've been racing since you were very, very young. Can you tell us a little bit about that background?
Yeah, I've been wheeling a car or a motorcycle for roughly 23 years, and so yeah, I mean it's been a while. It's been fun. I started not as a super young kid. I started about 18 years old. So yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like you at a really young age you kind of influenced about getting behind the wheel. What was it like? I think you started with motorcycles, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I started with a professional desert racing on a motorcycle.
Yeah. What was it like the first time you hopped on a motorcycle?
Oh, geez. It's riding a dirt bike, having the helmet on, having the ability to go over 100 miles an hour and race against competitors is, I mean, it's a unique experience for sure. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and like I said, you just to be able to be off road and be able to do bikes the way that you do. I mean, it's absolutely great as well. you know, and I believe that was roughly around the time. I mean, it was very popular, I think, in the 80s and the 90s to start using motorcycles as well and to be able to use it as well. What was the racing scene like back when you were racing?
Yeah, you know, I mean, racing is one of those things that it is just, like, it evolves, like on the technology part, when, you know, you can get better equipment and better technology on that, but racing's just racing, man. I mean, you go out, you throw your helmet on, you have your competitors, and at the end of the day, you want that guy that has the checkered flag and not them, so... So the evolution of racing, you know, I mean, comes from the technology standpoint, but it's pretty raw.
Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, the transition between motorcycles and cars and when that kind of happened?
So I've been fortunate enough in my day to break over 78 broken bones, and so that was my first realization that I needed to get off a dirt bike. I got tired of getting hurt, so I went from motorcycles to streetcars. Did that for a bit. I loved it, but there's just, for me, there's nothing like the dirt. So transitioned over into off-road trucks about 4 years ago, and that's been pretty much all she wrote, man. I mean, it is an incredible sport for sure.
Chelsea, do you have any questions?
Yeah. Have you had a chance to ride the African Twin yet, that new bike they put out?
I've never even heard of that. I'm sorry, sister.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
It's new. Well, I was selling bikes for a while, so I knew all about it. But, yeah, it's like a dual-purpose bike, so you can take it on the dirt, you can take it on the road. It's like an adventure bike.
Got you. Now, I stick in the 1,000 horsepower trophy trucks that, you know, will do 150 miles an hour across the dirt. So I'm not much of a dirt bike guy anymore. I kind of learned my lesson in the day.
You need to send a shout out to Kelly Brown.
All right. Well, I was just wondering. I wanted to get a take from a real racer who knows the dirt.
I was going to ask, what was the worst injury that you've gotten on a motorcycle?
Oh, man, the list can go on and on. It was probably, let's see, 2000. It's 2000 or 2001. We were in Wells, Nevada, big national race, had a good start. There were 450 riders. I took off about a quarter mile into the start. I got taken out by a guy, crashed the dirt bike at over 100 miles an hour, ended up basically exploding my arm, my elbow, into like powder pretty much. So what I ended up having to have done is I have a heel bone and then an Achilles tendon that is grafted and screwed into my arm now that reattached my tricep muscle. So, I'm pretty lucky to actually have any movement in my arm, but that was probably one of the worst ones. I mean, I broke both collarbones at the same time. I broke legs, I broke ribs, I broke, you name it, I broke it.
Now, I know that even in a vehicle, in a four-wheel vehicle, that you're gonna have injuries as well. I mean, it's a really physically demanding thing as well. How was it for you to change over from motorcycle over to a four-wheel vehicle?
Well, there's a saying in racing, as the guys get older, it's with age comes the cage. So for the most part, most people will start on dirt bikes, ride dirt bikes, very physically demanding on that for sure. I got a little older, went into car racing. So now I, you know, I mean, we're in
We're in fire suits, helmets, Hans devices. You know, we have a cage around us. The misconception is that we're, you know, I mean, we go out there and we drive and it's not very physically demanding. So that is a misconception. So we are, we're racing in temperatures. Like for example, a couple weeks ago, the Baja 500, the outside temperature, so the outside ambient temperature was 134 degrees. So we're inside the race car in full gear with helmets, with fire, all of our fire protection, and we basically sit right on the motor. So inside the cab of the race car, you can get 140 degrees, and you do that from point A to point B, which is about 9 hours. So very physically demanding. When I race, you're looking at, you know, all these 10 pounds of water weight. So it's demanding,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I was gonna ask about, you know, obviously during the nighttime and then maybe the early morning is probably the best time to race at that point because it's a lot cooler, obviously. Once the sun goes down and all that, I mean, is it a little bit easier on you guys? Is it kind of a sigh of relief once that sun goes down and those temperatures go down in a race like that?
Well, racing at night is a little different for sure. I mean, you have to change your focus quite a bit. Daytime, of course, you can see, you know, what's coming at you at high speed. At the nighttime, you know, we have great lights, we have great lighting systems, but it's like driving in a tunnel. So you have to be aware of what's coming on and coming at you. You have to be more focused, and so even though the temperatures go down, it's a little bit more stressful just because you can't see.
Is there a race that you want to do that you have yet to do yet?
Two races. The Baja 1000, which is, I mean, it's the Baja 1000. I mean, most people around know what that is. We're looking to do that this year in November, and then one of the big ones that I eventually would like to do is the Dakar Rally, which is a 2,700 mile race. It's for me, I like to race anything though. So, I mean, there's every race that's out there, or every race that I haven't competed in yet, I eventually want to.
Yeah, I mean, the Dakar, I think, has changed its path, I think, the past couple of years because of political issues. But that's probably one of the most biggest rally races out there as well. So it'd be interesting to see you out on that one, definitely.
Yep.
As well. Chelsea, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I was just wondering what kind of training goes into getting ready to race if you guys are under that kind of conditions. Do you guys run a lot? Do you do a lot of cardio?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it's the training regimen that I do personally is a big part of my day-to-day life. I mean, like, I spend an hour and a half at the gym. Not so much in heavy weight training, because I do like to stay lean and mean, but a lot of cardio. You want to be able to be under high stress circumstances and situations and be able to keep your heart rate down. And then you want to be able to stay focused. And so I have different things that I do. I've got certain brain games that I'll play on the iPad while I'm trying to keep my heart rate at 160 beats a minute, just to keep mentally focused and keep your brain focused as well while you're under the stressful situations. There's
That's
a lot
really cool.
That we could,
I,
go ahead.
I just didn't know that any of that went into it at all. And you know, I train MMA, so we've got all kinds of specialized things that we do, you know, for our and stuff like that, but I didn't know that you guys lost 10 pounds within a race like that. Do you have a way to stay hydrated, or you guys just have to go through a special process when you're finished.
Well, for me, we do have Camelback. We do have water somewhat available on the race car. But like I said, the focus is so intense that you really don't have that much time to hydrate. So I a year ago or so, I created a supplement company called Pure 49, and that actually has products that I use, electrolyte products, those type of things to keep the hydration and to keep the mental focus and acuity there. So yeah, there is a lot involved for sure.
That's cool.
Yeah, I'll have to shout out to our fighter friends there, Chelsea. See if it has really good applications in terms of it and rehydrating people after fights. But especially after weigh-ins as well. It's interesting to say the least. You know, you talked a little bit about starting your supplement company as well. Now you only had a high school education, and now you're building up these companies as well. How's the learning curve been in terms of learning the business? Obviously, you've been on one end of the business and being able to observe what's going on in the other end of things, but what's it been like for you to kind of learn and get to that process of being a business owner?
Well, it's interesting because, I run my businesses and I run pretty much my life like I drive a race car, right? So, all I have is a high school education. I wasn't a book smart kid at all growing up. I struggled in school, was kind of the outcast a little bit. But I always had this inner drive and this inner ambition to be better than I was yesterday. And so that's kind of my mantra that I have now is, as long as I forward progress every single day, it may be just a little bit, but as long as I progress and I'm a better person than I was the day before, then I'm moving in the right direction. So I didn't go to college as the educational part, but my life experiences and the things that I've learned and experienced in my life, that's my education. I have so many failures in my life. I can't, it's incredible. But it's nice to be able to feel like I have some success. And when you're standing on that mountain of success, you're standing on all your failures.
And it's important for you to sometimes stumble in order to learn from that lesson, and then improve as you go on. And that's the same thing with racing as it is with business.
Yes, absolutely. It's always looking forward. I mean, in racing, there's a term, you know, people ask you what's the most important part of the track that you're driving on, and my response always is the most important part is the next corner. So it's not, you know, I don't look at the mistake that I made in the previous corner, and I don't look too far ahead because I'll lose focus on the next upcoming corners. And it's the same thing in business. You know, I have to be able to look and see what I have in front of me right now and push as hard as I can and make that process as perfect as I can at that moment. And then the opportunity will always arise to be able to progress the business or the racing.
Chelsea, do you have a question?
No, I was just going to say that was a really good way to look at it. It's well put to me. When you said that when you're successful, you're standing on all your failures.
No, it's a true story. I mean, if you look at anybody who has any success whatsoever, they didn't just fall into it. People push really hard. I mean, you know, with you being a fighter, for example, there's been several times I'm sure you've got beat down. I mean, and it happens, but it's the ability to pick yourself back up, to stand up, to take your breath and say, you know what? I got knocked down, but now it's my turn. And you push hard,
yep.
And you push forward.
right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's great. Like I said, you've learned a lot from the situation as well, so it's great to be able to see that you've found successes on that as well. And you have, obviously, you have your own race team now. You've got other drivers on there as well. What do you look for personally in a driver to be a part of your company?
Well, on I do have one driver now that he jumped on this year. His name's Ray Griffiths. More than anything, other than just being a good driver, for me, I look for good personalities. I look for people that can play the character in the story, right? So if you look at racing all across in any forms, you'll always have a fan base, and then that fan base has that one guy that they like and then that one guy that they don't like. So it's kind of almost a movie reference. You've got the villain and you've got the hero. So I like to pick the drivers, and including myself, we like to be that character in the story that people root for, that has the good personalities, the people that can give back to the community, the people that can drive hard, and that can also speak well.
So, I mean, is this something that you're looking forward to in the future, to maybe add a couple more drivers to your team?
Yeah, eventually. I like to really focus on me and my driving for now. I do have my 10-year-old boy. He's coming up through the ranks as well. And so that's going to be, it's going to be fun to have him around. But yeah, in the future, I mean, who knows, right? I'd like to be able to get 6 or 7 drivers and have everybody drive, under my team and under my flag. But if the opportunity's there, then we'll take it. If it's not, I'm okay with that as well.
And I mean, how has it been for you to find sponsors and to develop relationships with sponsors as well?
Sponsorship is an interesting animal in and of itself. And we have great support from a lot of people. We have a lot of people that support what we do. We're hoping this year to get a championship in the Best in the Desert, and of course that brings a better light to our race team. But for the most part, for me, I'm looking at creating businesses for myself that can help fund the race team. So instead of me relying on other companies or other sponsorship, because the sponsorship can go away in a second. You can get X amount of dollars for 1 year, and then next year they can go away. So for me, that's here again why I built the supplement company and why I have a few other companies going is to be able to build something around racing that can be a sustainable income source, so we can progress the team and we don't have to walk around with our hand out for sponsorship for other people. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
no, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, why?
I've never
why?
Been that
why
guy.
Ask? Yeah. Go ahead.
I've never been that guy. I've never been that guy that has had my hand out. I have had to work for every last thing in my life, every single day, and at the beginning of life, at the beginning of my careers, it was awfully hard because I didn't have anybody to fall back on other than myself. And so that's kind of what I do now, is I make sure that I set myself up in a position where if it fails, it's because I let it fail and not because of anybody else's ideas.
Yeah, I mean, it's the old adage, if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, you teach a man a fish, you feed him for a lifetime. It seems like that's the situation.
Exactly.
With the sponsorship, if
yes.
It's behind you and it's all you, then you don't have to worry about anything, happening or whatever that. So it's great to be able to hear as well. Now, tell us a little bit about, you know, the process of writing this book and getting to that point where you wanted to tell your life story.
Well, it was, man, talk about an interesting path, right? So it was probably 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, I like to tell stories, right? So, you know, I have a lot of racing stories. I have a lot of really good, like, life experience stories. I felt like I've done a lot of things. So I tell stories to friends and people that I meet. And, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, I had a good friend of mine say, hey, look, you know, you ought to write a book at least. So it sparked my interest, and my general idea with it was to be able to write a book, to be able to have some type of legacy for my children, something that, you know, that my kids and grandbabies and all sorts of, you know, people down the generations could open up a book and read about me and my life and the struggles that I had and then how I overcame them. So as I was writing, and, you know, as a couple years went by, I started showing some chapters here and there, and it was very interesting to listen to the reaction of people. I do suffer from severe class 1 bipolar disorder. I was diagnosed 17 years ago, and when I would have people read chapters, it was pretty awesome to listen and have them ask, how did you go past this point, or how did you beat the disorder at that time? Because for the most part, most everybody either knows someone that has a mental disorder or is a person with a mental disorder. But because there's such a stigma in mental disorder, it's not talked about. And I want to be able to bring that in the public eye, that having a mental disorder isn't a bad thing. We're just as normal as the next person. We have the same goals and the same aspirations. We love people the same. And if I can bring that in the forelight of the population, maybe I can help people. I mean, maybe my stories will help someone. That's ultimately the goal of the book.
Yeah, you know, I think that's coming to light. A lot of these mental misuses, it seems like over the past year, that seems to be a pressing issue in terms of mental health awareness as well. I know several different outlets that have been doing it. Mauro Ranallo, who's a very famous MMA and fight announcer, is openly bipolar as well, and he's always talking about the idea of mental awareness and all that as well. Chelsea, did you have any questions?
Yeah, I just wanted to come back to your supplements. I wanted to know where I could check those out.
So the website is www.gear49.com. Website's up. We're based in motorsports nutrition, but we have, because the motorsports side of things is so intense and so demanding, we feel that it has a broad spectrum, of course. I mean, so but not only for race car drivers, but for fighters, for mountain bikers, for anybody who is an athlete, we feel that it's a pretty good fit for sure. We have really clean product. Everything is U.S. made. And then to kind of go back onto the bipolar that the Mark was just discussing, and that's kind of one of the other reasons why I started this, is because in mental illness, there are a lot of factors on being able to control the mental illness. Diet and exercise is a huge part of being able to keep your mind functioning like it's supposed to function. And so in creating the supplement company, I created it in a way that helps brain function, that helps focus, that helps the mental acuity.
Well, that's awesome.
That's absolutely great. Yeah. Go ahead, Chelsea.
I was just going to say, I really appreciate somebody who doesn't just, you know, fill one need. They cover all the bases. So I have a lot of respect for your business, for sure.
Thank you. Thank you. That means a lot.
Now, can you tell us where the is the book available now, or has it come out yet?
No, we're just pretty much starting the book tour. It should be available within 60 days. Working on a couple different graphic ideas and stuff, but not quite out yet. But when it does, hopefully it will be good. You know, I'm not looking to make a ton of money on it. It's not necessarily a business thing for me. It's more about helping my community, giving back to the community, giving back to the people who have helped me. So, yeah, I'm excited for it to come out for sure.
Well, yeah, I look forward to it as well. I mean, any races coming up for you?
Oh man, there's always races coming up. We've got over the next 10 weeks, over the next 13 weeks, we have 10 races. We've got Glen Helen, which is in Southern California. That's in, I think it's like July 23rd. We've got the Vegas to Reno race, longest desert race in the United States, starts in Las Vegas, ends in Reno, Nevada. That's coming up in August. We've got a bunch of regional races around. We're always behind the wheel. Always behind the wheel.
Well, that's great to hear. I mean, I wish some of these races were more often shown on television, but it would be great to be able to see you live in action all the way in Vegas as well. So it's great to be able to see that as well. Anything else you want to add? Anything else you need to promote?
No, I mean, if anybody wants to check out kind of actually what we do, I know that I can talk about off-road and off-road trucks. A lot of times people can't really visualize it. So our race page, it's raceprotech.com. You can check that out. You can kind of, you can look at the trucks. You can see the videos. And then one of the other things that we do have that here again is trying to give back to the motorsports community. I support the United States Motorsports Association, which is an association that is doing an economical impact study on motorsports, showing how motorsports brings a huge economical base into the United States. So, other than that, you know, I mean, I'm promoting me, I suppose. Promoting good, healthy living and just letting everybody know that I love to drive a race car.
Anything else from you, Chelsea?
No, man, I just I love that you're getting your story out there like that. You're doing more than just racing. I think it's great. Good for you.
Perfect. Thank you.
And I want to mention, you guys can follow Justin on Twitter, JustinPeck49 on Twitter, and Justin Peck Racing on Facebook as well. You guys can check him out there. Justin, absolutely great to have you on the show, and hopefully we'll get you back on the show sometime down the line.
Perfect. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Chelsea.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you.
Bye. Justin Peck, everybody, absolutely fascinating story behind him and in his racing and all that as well. So if you get a chance to check out the Vegas to Reno rally, please do so as well. And some of these other races, like I said, I wish some of these rally races were more on television. I know they're a little bit more long endurance, but they're still fun to watch, especially off-road. I mean, I'm pretty sure you've had your experiences off-road, Chelsea.
Oh, yeah, I used to ride dirt bikes all the time.
Yeah, it must be. Must have been fun of the year. What's probably the biggest engine that you've had on your motorbike when you're out there, having some fun?
Man, we used to ride four wheelers too. I guess the biggest I've ever been on is like the hunting quads are like 600s, which aren't as fast, but I've ridden probably like 400s. And then I used to own a YZ85, and at 13, that's a lot of bike. It's a race style bike, so it's got a lot of punch.
Yeah. Did you know that Brian Caraway is a huge fan of motorcycle racing?
I kind of thought so. You know, I've seen some posts and things. I know that Jake Ellenberger is a big rider. He's into it big time.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and I think if I remember correctly, Misha was going to go out racing a little bit too, doing some stuff. Hopefully not before her title match coming up at UFC 200. But, but yeah. I mean, it's great to be able to talk to you, Mike. So off-road racing, a lot of people don't, they're into NASCAR or more the pavement type races, and they kind of forget that sometimes there's these really great off-road races that are out there as well. So it's great for people like Justin Feck to be able to do that and to be able to have his own supplement company. You know, people don't think of racing and supplements, but you have to have, that as well, especially with the mental acuity kind of aspect to it. And I know in MMA, that's a situation where people fear that you lose your mental acuity as much as you get hit in the head. So
yeah.
It might be something that might be a crossover. How's it been for you? How's training been going? I know Andy's got her fight coming up. How's everything going over there in Louisiana?
Things are really good. Team spirits are really good. Everybody's weight cut's going well. We've been training hard together and having a good time, even though they're cutting a lot of weight right now. You know, it's deep into the cut. So that's when, if you're talking about mental game, that's when it gets really tough on a fighter. But everybody's doing good with it. And we're having a good time and still getting quality training in. So that's what matters.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I mean, do you know when you're fighting next? Any announcements on that?
There's been a few dates floating around, but there's a lot going on with our team. So we haven't nailed anything down for sure yet, but I think it's going to be exciting when it does happen. There's some talk with some different promotions right now, and I'm hoping that we land one in particular. But if not, I'm just looking forward to finally setting foot in the cage for real. You know, I've been doing some grappling tournaments and having a good time with those, so we'll see what happens next.
Now, what have you been doing outside of training, obviously? I mean, has there been anything fun that you've been doing?
Man, it seems like we're always doing something. If we're not training, then we're going to some fights, or we're going to grappling tournaments, or we're going out to watch the fights together. But, there's been little moments where we're just kind of chilling. We're just hanging out and listening to music and having a good time. But it's we're such a tight-knit team that we're pretty much like a family. So we just have a good time being around one another, you know. It doesn't take a big adventure for us to have a super good time. I feel like I have fun every day with these people, so it's a good place for me to be.
Yeah, it's great to hear that as well. Just to be able to do that as well. It's been an interesting week, to say the least. First of all, there's a really sad note that a fighter has died. This is like the second one that has died by a hit and run this year. And then there's been two others that have been injured by people that have been hit by cars. And it's absolutely a damn shame that the stuff like this is happening and people aren't being responsible drivers and looking out for people. So I'm a little bit saddened by that. So it's ridiculous. Absolutely crazy. That's happened four times this year, and two of those times we've lost two great fighters. It's been absolutely ridiculous, to say the least. Sad to be able to see that as well. But, but on a happier note, things have been going crazy as of late. I don't know if you caught the news, but Caitlin Jukagan has signed with the UFC.
Oh, wow, I didn't hear that.
Yep, she's right now. Word is that she's facing Lauren Murthy up in South Dakota on July the 13th. So it'll be an interesting fight, to say the least. For those of you who don't know who Caitlin Jukagan is, she's currently 7-0, probably one of the highest flyweight prospects that wasn't signed to a major promotion until now. It'll be interesting. And her fights, and she's no slacker in terms of her fights. Some of the fights, I think her last fight, the gal was 7-0 coming in, and Jukagan gave her first loss. And then a couple others. Sharjia Eubanks her first loss. So there's some tough competition that she's faced, and she's ended up beating them. So I'm interested to see how she does in her UFC debut on July 13th. So we'll have to see what goes on there as well.
So it's going to be another flyweight bout, you said?
It's going to be bantamweight. She's going to move up to bantamweight.
Oh, okay.
But her last fight was bantamweight as well.
Okay, I was hoping they were finally opening it up.
Yeah, a lot of people are waiting. You know, I think that it's going to take another 6 months or so in order for them to do it, because I think they're worried about the bantamweight division being dropped out. I mean, basically a lot of the bantamweights dropping down to 125.
Right.
I think come August things are going to kind of settle out a little bit, just because August, when the Associated Boxing Commissions meet, then they'll start to do some weight cutting rules that may affect people going up and down in weight. So it may affect it. That's something that everybody's watching, especially me. I'm watching that to see what goes on in terms of weight and all that as well, and how weight cutting is done and all that as well. I know several things have already been established, including early weight cuts. I think the Nevada has adopted early weight cutting now too. The bad news is that we don't get those exciting hit on the scale and all that as well, that we already know what the weight is pretty much without what them even announcing. But the good news is that it's a healthier cut. People can hydrate a lot faster in terms of that. It's a lot healthier. So I'm interested to see how that goes in terms of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't know if you caught, and I'm absolutely happy about this, Ashley Cummings won her fight this past Friday. Sorry to say it wasn't televised. I did get to see the video of it though. Somebody had recorded it, and Ashley was happy enough to share that with me. And what's really cool is about Ashley was like going, okay, it was the easiest cut I've ever had. I've only had to cut three pounds to make 110. So by the looks of it, Ashley is dropping down to 105, which I think a lot of us wanted her to at some point. So I'm really happy for Ashley to be able to see that as well. Did you catch any of the Bellator fights this past Friday?
I caught the tail end of one. And I can't pronounce her name, so I'm not going to try to butcher it.
Was it the televised one?
Yes.
Elime?
Yes, that was a great fight.
Yeah, Elime McFarlane versus Rebecca Ruth. Rebecca Ruth is a tough gal. I mean, she fought off two really tight rear naked chokes and then finally succumbed to that third one. I think it's going to be interesting to see where the division goes. I'm interested to see when they're going to crown a freaking flyweight champion over there. I think they have enough talent to go around, as much as people are saying, well, they don't have enough talent. They've got at least five or six girls signed. So it's just a question of them, sitting somebody down and trying to find that as well. Although I don't think they're going to be crowning a featherweight champion anytime soon, considering what happened to Mara Lewis. I feel sorry for her. The gal that she faced never makes weight. She never makes 145. She never does. It's kind of crazy. I don't know what to say, but yeah, I kind of feel sorry for Mara Lewis for losing that fight to somebody that obviously outweighed her by that much. So it's crazy.
How much was the difference?
What? I think it was a 5 or 6 pound difference. I don't think she even bothered to cut down anymore. She went on the scale. She was like 150 or 151. Went on the scale. Didn't even bother cutting. So yeah, it was kind of that situation. I mean, and this is like the fourth or fifth time she's actually not made weight. There was a time when she was facing King Couture, and she was like a good 20 pounds over. This was in Mexico, by the way. A good 20 pounds over Kim Couture's weight. It's like, you know, sometimes I think you just got to admit that you can't make 145 or can't make 135. And just stick to 155, which I think she should. I think lightweight division needs to be developed a little bit more. I know Invicta's had one or two fights in that division. I think it should be developed. I think some of these girls should consider that and really kind of start getting that division going. So hopefully that'll end up happening.
I mean, if you say you're going to make a weight, you need to make that weight. That's not right. It's part of the sport, you know.
It is, you know, and, you know, with these weight cut changes, I mean, things are going to get crazier because, you know, they have to make weight at a certain point, you know, be rehydrated and all that as well. There's, you know, certain density levels. Personally, I was always in the thing that, you know, I think a doctor should be consulted, you know, and say, okay, this is what this is the weight that you should be at. In terms of fighting, you know, don't go anything lower than this or whatever, you know, just to do that, because you have to go for your medicals anyway. That could be a quick evaluation, and then if you want to drop a weight class, then, you know, try a test cut, go to a doctor, and the doctor can say, okay, you know, you're fine to go to drop to another weight class. I think that's the situation. I think it's the best case scenario, which I don't think is ever going to happen, but I don't know. We'll see what happens there as well. So, go ahead.
What I find odd is that, yeah, you know, and I coached high school wrestling, and they have a hydration test that they're required to take, and it's based off, you know, height, weight, body fat percentage, and they test your pee basically, and they're able to tell how far you can drop in a healthy manner. And it's just really odd to me that that's not used across the board for combat sports in which you have to make a weight. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, like I said, I'm looking forward to August because they're going to be in Vegas. The Associated Boxing Commission to be in Vegas. There's several proposals up on the line in terms of that. I'm interested also the definition of what a 10-8 is, because there have been arguments about what 10-8 is. You know, some people are saying, oh, you have to be an absolute dominant round for one person. I've been arguing that, you know, it should also be, you know, if somebody's really close to finishing a person, that should be considered a 10-8. It's
yeah.
A big, huge argument. There's no clear definition what a 10-8 is. A 10-8 is easier to get in boxing than it is MMA, and I don't think that's right.
Right.
I think there's sometimes that we do need 10-8s in there as well. So we'll have to see how that kind of fills it as well. So let's change gears to, have you been out to any movies lately, the theater, or have you been staying in, and has Andrea and guys have had movie nights or anything?
We have movie nights, usually on Monday nights, because Monday night is like our off day. And we usually will get Redbox movies. We saw, so we're not seeing anything super new, but we did see Bad Grandpa a few weeks ago. And then last weekend we watched 10 Cloverfield Lane. So nothing super new.
Yep. So are you more of a horror fan, an action fan, or, you know, what kind of genre do you like mainly?
I like action movies. I'm a girl. I do like my rom-coms. I don't know, comedies. I like anything that's like not just plain, you know, maybe has a little bit of twist to it. I enjoy that.
Yeah. Now, was there anybody that you looked up to in the movies when it comes to your fighting, or kind of any kind of superhero or character or anything that you looked up to, you know, as a youngster or, you know, as a fighter, you know, as a person, as a fighter yourself. Anybody in particular?
Not really. I've always had a thing for like American Gladiators because I used to watch that when I was little. I guess that would be my thing, probably, is the Gladiators.
Yeah, no, I remember the original version, and then they came back with a secondary version with Gina Carano, which was great. You know, I miss Gina Carano right where I wish she would do more interviews. She is great. She's awesome. I had the opportunity to interview her once, and that was back when she was with Elite XC. She was the nicest person in the world. She was in a mall at the time that we were interviewing her. Really nice and sweet and all that as well. She's a very bright person, though. We haven't heard very much from her at all. I know she's dating Kevin Ross, who won this past week at Bellator. But yeah, I mean, and I have you seen Deadpool yet?
I haven't. Andrea and I were actually supposed to hang out and watch that one night, but we just haven't gotten around to it. We've been so busy. I mean, like I said, if we're not in the gym, we're doing something else to, you know, the girls have had photo shoots to get ready for the fight and everything, so we haven't had a lot of downtime.
Well, Gina was really good in that movie, I thought. She didn't have very many lines, and people were like going, oh, yeah, she's never very lines. But she was actually pretty good in it. You know, I liked her in that role. So, yeah, I'm interested to see what other things that she did. It's done as well in terms of the movie situation as well. I mean, have you been watching American Ninja Warrior at all?
Yeah, I did catch a little bit of that a couple days ago.
I feel sorry for Mighty Casey. And the thing is, too, is that if you're really small and you don't have a very big reach, it is kind of against you in terms of the Ninja Warrior course. Casey kind of transcends that. But, you know, if you don't have very long arms or very long legs, it's kind of tough. did you catch Felice Herrig's room by any chance?
No, I didn't know she did that. That's awesome.
I'll have to show you the video. She did pretty well for herself, but at that night, it seemed like those rolling logs were the ones that everybody was falling on. I mean, most everybody was falling on those logs. Even some of the most seasoned professionals were falling on those logs. It was like the most difficult obstacle to face. And there were some really difficult obstacles. That ring swing seemed more difficult, but it seemed like a lot of people were able to kind of maneuver on that one. So it was a little easier than I thought it was going to be. But those rolling logs were the ones that were really, really tough. And there's some times where they almost spiffed it and they end up somehow, sneaking the way out there. So would that be something that you'd be interested in doing at some point?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I've been talking about that for a while because it was, you know, a long time ago on Nickelodeon, they had, like, Global Guts. And like I said, I've always loved the Gladiators and stuff like that. And I've done a Tough Mudder race and a half marathon. So, yeah, I would love to do something like that. And I think that we're going to end up seeing a lot more people from MMA and stuff like that doing things like that, you know, because it's so similar in some ways. And the training is going to be, you know, something that you can almost eclipse. And so, yeah, I would love to do something like that. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, I mean, several MMA fighters have done it. Megumi Fujii did it when it was the Japanese version. There was a couple other Japanese female fighters that have done that. Kira Gracie has done it within the Japanese version as well. Trying to remember, Felice did it, and then Michelle Watterson did it, but she did not do very well. She lost the first obstacle, so I kind of feel really bad about that. But so far, I think Felice and Kyra have been the two that did the best runs so far. I think Felice will probably do it again next year. I won't be surprised if she does. She did pretty well for herself. I think depending on the obstacles, I think she would do a pretty good job of getting through most of it. I'm interested to see if she would make it up the wall at all. You know, that's a very high wall, but, you know, I'm really interested to see how Felice does next year. I think, there were points at that where you think that she wasn't going to make it, and she made it perfectly great. So, and she was training for it, too. So, you know, hopefully that ends up happening. I think, if I remember correctly, Felice is fighting in the Chicago card coming up as well. So she's currently training for that competition. But it'll be interesting to see if some of these people are going to be there as well. I ended up meeting a couple of the stunt women that have tried for Ninja Warrior when I was out at the Artemis Film Festival. Some of these stunt women that are doing very well for themselves. So it's great to be able to meet them as well. So I think one of them actually made it pretty far in their run this year. Actually, I think she made it all the way straight through, if I remember correctly.
That's
so one
awesome.
Of the gals I met there, so it was great to be able to see that as well. So yeah, it's interesting. I haven't caught up with Sparta at all. They're doing the Sparta race kind of reality show. I haven't caught in that one yet. My father is a huge fan of the Ninja Warrior one, and I once in a while point him out. Oh, I know this person. I've talked to this person before. So I mean, it's interesting to say the least in terms of some of these female athletes and how they're kind of transcending everything as well. So it's great to be able to see it. Maybe Andrea, maybe if she's not doing anything next year, she'll try out for Ninja Warrior too. She'd be an interesting individual to try out, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, I mean, yeah, interesting to say the least in terms of everything. I think I'm gonna go see the Ghostbusters movie this weekend. I've got a couple of friends that are a part of that movie, so I have to kind of go and see it. I don't want to say have to, but I want to go see it just because they're part of it. I know they're getting a lot of slack, you know, flack for their trailers and all that as well, but I don't care. I like it. It's great to be able to see some of these great movies that are out right now. And I'm taking a look and see what's at Redbox now. There's a couple movies that I haven't seen yet. I think Kung Fu Panda comes out this week, I think. I thought I saw a commercial for it. So that might be something, you know, I have to rent, especially for Andrea's daughter. Because I'm
really
sure you'd enjoy that.
I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it'd be great to be able to do that as well. Hopefully within the next few minutes here, we'll have two guys that have gotten started their own film festival. It's an online film festival, you guys, and I believe it's absolutely free to enter. The top prize is $10,000. And it's all fan voted. The fans have to vote and say, you know, which one's the best. Some really interesting categories. Obviously, there's short. There's documentary, I think, style and another as well. Let me double check the site here real quick. The Fanboy Film Festival is what it's called. It's really, really great. It might be something I might consider. If I have anything, have you caught my documentary? I think at all, the one I just released to YouTube.
I really do want to see it. I'm being honest when I say that, but I'm an idiot and I completely spaced looking it up. I did.
Yeah. Okay. Again, I'll have to tweet that to you.
Yes. Please do.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see if we can find some of these. They're very unique in terms of the fact that there's a feature film, there's a film captured by a smart device, shorts, and they also have a meme thing. So you don't have to necessarily be a filmmaker. If you're really cool and creative and witty and do a meme, you can put that up there and you can get a cash prize for that. I'm kind of interested because I do have a feature that I can probably put up there for that one and kind of campaign. I wouldn't mind $10,000. That would actually cover the cost of me making my first film, but we'll have to see of that. So, I've got a couple documentaries that I'm still working on as well. So it'll be interesting to say the least in terms of that. I wish I could be up in Kansas for Invicta. I can't be there. I was hoping it was going to be California because – I've got a big project I'm doing in California, and I'm basically waiting to see if Invicta comes back down there. By the sounds of it, that's what the situation's going to be. So we'll have to see what goes down there as well. You're probably not doing very much traveling at all besides, you know, with the team, I'm assuming.
Well, we've been traveling. I mean, we went to Dallas a few weekends ago for the Europa, and then I was in Tyler, Texas last weekend for another tournament. And there's talk of traveling all kinds of different places, so we'll see. I'm thinking about trying to make it up there for that, though.
Yeah. You know, like I said, you know, it's difficult for me, and I kind of said that I wouldn't do a Kansas one again, just because. As much as it was fun, you know, getting up there as well, it's just so difficult, and the flights are not cheap to get up there to Kansas City. I know it's cheaper for Shannon and them to work at home base, but you know, some of us fans can't afford a $300-$400 ticket to get to there as well. So
yeah,
we'll have to see
sure.
and check that out as well. Well, without further ado, we have on the line two really great guys that are going to have the Fanboy Film Festival going on. We talked a little bit about it a couple minutes ago. Michael and Chris, I believe it's Kanick. Am I pronouncing that correctly, guys?
Correct, and it's just Michael Kanick today.
Okay, it's Michael.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
How's everything going with you?
Very good. Thank you for having us on your show. things are going well. Things are going very well. Our film festival is closing for submissions this coming Friday, and the festival will officially run from July 15th to August 26th. And so far, we've gotten over 1,000 submissions. We have about 800 titles on our site right now. They're going to become available come July 15th. And we're all really excited over here.
Yeah, what category in particular seems to be the most popular, do you think?
Well, shorts seems to be the most popular. I think we have over 500, 600 shorts up on our site right now, just because it's so easy to upload them and it doesn't really take much time. A feature takes a little bit more time to upload it. You know, depending on what kind of internet connection you have, it could take anywhere from you know, half hour to a couple hours to upload. But the shorts seem to be the ones that we get the most of. So.
Yeah, you know, and that seems to be the big deal nowadays. And I think that it's an interesting dichotomy that people are a little bit, their attention spans tend to be a little bit less. And so we were seeing movies getting shorter and shorter. So some of these shorts are really good in terms of that as well. Now, what kind of delineates a short from a feature film in your guys' rules?
I'm sorry, say that again. What's the question?
What's the time limit in terms of being considered a short to versus a film feature film?
Oh, 15 minutes or less. So, anywhere from 1 minute to 50 minutes, and you're considered a short in our film festival. Over 50 minutes, and you're a feature.
Okay, so yeah, like most festivals, then over 50.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting. Because like I said, I personally have a couple films. One, I got a documentary that's like 37 minutes, so I consider it short. But then I've got another movie that's like 53 minutes, so it technically would be considered a feature.
So,
it's interesting, like I said, and interesting to say the least as well. Is there any certain genre that you're seeing in terms of the short films that you're seeing more of? Are you seeing more documentaries? Are you seeing more comedies? Are you seeing more dramatic pieces? Any certain trends that you're seeing?
I think we're seeing a lot more science fiction and horror, I guess more the science fiction, the comic book theme than anything else. And I think it has to do with our branding and the name, the Fanboy Film Festival. And,
But outside of that, I mean, it's pretty rounded out outside of that in terms of comedies and horrors and dramas and documentaries. We've got a pretty nice selection on our site at the moment. It's but you know, a lot of them have that comic book. I would say the largest group are the ones that have that comic book theme to it, you know.
Now, Chelsea, have any questions?
I mean, what do you think brings that kind of trend on? Do you think it's just kind of like where the world's at right now, or because, you know, maybe because of all the Marvel movies that have resurrected, or where do you think that's coming from?
Well, I think it comes largely due to our if you've been to our site, you see that we have this like comic book styling.
Yeah. I did see that.
And you know, it started as a new site that grew into a film festival, a new site that was directed primarily to pop culture news, then grew into this film festival site. So I think a lot of those elements are what play into us getting a large number of, you know, comic book related movies. And actually some of them are really funny. I mean, we've got one that is a funny fanboy, I guess, take on the Phantom Menace movie, Star Wars Phantom Menace, and a guy who ruins it for a bunch of people. So, you know, stuff like that, pretty funny. But, you know, they're all real great quality. You know, there's a lot of up-and-coming filmmakers with a lot of talent is just coming to our site and trying to get exposure and getting visibility for their films, you know. So.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you caught what's been going on with the Star Trek fan films and all that as well. I don't know if you caught the news about the directive that I believe Paramount had put out in terms of it. But they set up a bunch of rules that were for fan films that, you know, they can't be over 30 minutes. They can't have people that have been in Star Trek. You know, there's certain things that they can't do or anything like that. You know, first of all, have you heard about what was going on in terms of that? And, you know, what do you think that is going to happen in terms of the fandom? In terms of, because I know a lot of people have, you know, a lot of Star Wars fans do Star Wars fan films, a lot of Star Trek fans do Star Trek fan films, but now Star Trek's starting to do this this thing where they're limiting what a fan film can be. Do you have any thoughts on that, or have you heard anything about it?
I have heard on that, and I we have to play by those rules, so. You know, my take on it is I understand their position and they're trying to protect their intellectual property. I think, though, that their strong suits are, you know, their loyal fan base. And because their fan bases are able to go off and do, you know, and pretend to be part of this world that they've created. And when you start creating rules like that, number one, how are you going to control it and enforce it? And number two, you're limiting your fan base to go off and be creative and essentially do marketing for you if you're a big studio. So, you know, it's a catch 22. You have to be very sensitive to that stuff. And you know, I mean, if I was a big studio, I would want to protect my IP, but I'd also want to, you know, understand that shit, man, this is my fan base and my fan base is doing all this free marketing for me, you know, and they get other people excited, you know, so it's not like they're taking any money out of their pocket at the end of the day. So,
yeah. And the thing is that, I mean, some of these films aren't going to be making multi-million dollars at all. I think so. They were worried about some of the bigger ones because I think one of the fan films budgets were like $100,000 they've raised off of GoFundMe. So they were looking for more of a feature than they had. Some stars from the Star Trek franchise that would be coming in to do it. I think that rule is kind of stupid because if they're willing to, if these actors are willing to go into it, you know, I don't think they're going to make a ton of money off of it, but it gives the fans an opportunity to work with some of the great actors. So, yeah, it's an interesting situation, to say the least. I think Star Wars has I don't think Disney has laid any kind of these rules, but I won't be surprised if they kind of take the same tact in terms of it. But if you see all these festivals where, you know, Star Wars film festivals have been doing very, very well in terms of internal marketing and all that as well. So I'm interested to see how that kind of goes in terms of these other movie franchises. So we'll have to see what happens there as well.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's one of those more to come situations and seeing, you know, how this plays out, you know, how they, you know, do they tick off their fan base by limiting their, you know, creativity and I guess their ability to role play a little bit, because that's, you know, essentially what these fan films are. You know, it's these fans able to, you know, recreate their, you know, the worlds that they love. But, you know, I guess more to come right there.
Yeah.
I don't think it really affects
us
for this time around. So more to come, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, more to come. We'll see what happens in the next coming years. I mean, yeah, things are kind of a little bit crazy at the moment in terms of that as well. But some of these filmmakers end up becoming, you know, actual filmmakers down the line too. It gets their feet wet in terms of the industry.
Yeah, and that's the case for a lot of the filmmakers that are on our site. You know, these are first, second, maybe third time filmmakers, and, you know, they're trying to get their name out and trying to get exposure. And that was the whole genesis of the idea, was to streamline the process where artists, filmmakers could get their work noticed, and not have to go through all the Hollywood BS. So, you know, that's what our intention here is. You know, that's why we don't charge a submission fee. That's why we don't charge for viewing. It's 100% free, and we give cash prizes, and it's all based on, you know, votes by registered fans, the audiences. We don't believe in stuffy juries. We don't believe in, you know, panels of industry professionals. We think that, listen, you just want to get your film out to get noticed. We're going to facilitate that. And, you know, we're going to let the fans vote on who they think are the best. So.
Yeah. I mean, and it's great to be able to have a cash prize and to be able to, I mean, if you're, you know, doing a short or whatever, $10,000 is really great in terms of, you know, even, you know, maybe helping with some of the costs of first of all, doing your short, but also to think about, you know, going ahead and doing another project. You know,
yep.
I've been doing a couple of projects myself, and, you know, a lot of them are under $10,000. So it's a situation where, you know, that little money, you just kind of roll with it and try to get something better or smarter and all that as well. So it's really great to have that kind of initiative. Speaking of initiative though, two interesting categories that you do have on the site. One is film captured entirely on a smart device, which is really interesting because technology has come to that point at which people can film on smart devices and it looks somewhat quality in terms of on that as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that category and you know, and it's kind of like I said, innovative. This is something that very few film festivals ever do, but tell me a little bit about that category and how that's been going about.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, we're an online film festival, and that in and of itself disrupts the normal film festival model, and it's progressive inherently. So I thought, you know, filmmakers are not just making films on traditional cameras anymore. And in keeping with the tone of the times and being progressive and innovative, I said, you know, we should have a special category for films that are created on a smartphone or a tablet and reward that category. And that's something that you don't see film festivals do today, but probably in 5 to 10 years, you're going to see more and more film festivals do that stuff. You know, when my brother went off and did the first online film festival 3 years ago, you know, it was unheard of. I mean, he got doors slammed in his face, you know, and a lot of industry professionals were, you know, shunning him. But they did it. They were pretty successful. This time around, now, you know, I launched a Fanboy, and you're seeing more brick-and-mortar film festivals experiment with an online supplement. Tribeca, Sundance, Toronto, they're all playing around with this online concept. So, it'd be very interesting. I'd like to believe that we're setting a precedent here with this one. And, more to come. And the next film festival we do, we get more entries and we build this category into, you know, what it is, what, you know, at the moment. And filmmakers are making films on tablets. You know, there's no way around it. And they can make pretty high quality with different softwares and apps. So, we're excited about it. I'm excited with the idea that we're going to be a pioneer in pushing this category and making these filmmakers gain the recognition that they deserve.
And then the other category I want to talk to you about is the memes category, which is very interesting because obviously that's a very social media, thing to have memes, especially on Twitter or Instagram as well. How did you come up with that idea? And, how's the reaction been so far in terms of that category?
Well, I like a good meme. I think everyone likes a good meme. I think memes are, again, a contemporary way for people to express themselves. It's pretty amazing that with two lines of words and a picture, we can convey so much emotion and information. So, again, keeping with our, comic book, theme and our pop culture theme, I said, let's have a meme contest. So we put a meme generator on our site and we're giving $1,000 cash prize to the best meme. So, and that'll be announced August 26th as well. We're hoping, when the festival starts, we encourage filmmakers to come on and promote their films to their audiences. So what we're creating is a community. So if each filmmaker goes off and promotes their relative networks, now you're building a huge network where all filmmakers can partake. Everybody, it's like one big potluck of audiences. So I'm very interested in seeing what the meme contest generates when everybody comes to the site and starts seeing, more and more memes. I personally love memes. I don't know. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I think
hilarious. I like my memes once in a while, especially the kitten memes. I'm pretty sure you got quite a few of those. But Chelsea, do you like memes at all?
I love memes. I was getting ready to say. I think they're a lot of fun. It's interesting, like you said, how much can be conveyed. Like it's they're a thing. That's the only way I can really put it. They're so. The colloquial phrases and things that are included, all the cultural icons and or just things that people, understand between them. I think it's interesting. I wonder how they came about. Do you know the history behind it at all?
I honestly do not know the history of memes, and I don't know who started. I don't know who's credited with founding the meme. But now that you bring that up, the next festival – I'd like to bring that person who's credited with being the grandfather of memes onto the site and naming the prize after that person. So I got some
awesome.
Homework to do. Yeah, I got some homework to do.
Yeah. I'm going to look it up real quick, too. I was going to mention that if it wasn't for memes, I don't think Gene Wilder would be as popular now as he was back in the day.
Right?
Here's a guy that's 90 years old. He just turned 90, everybody. And his face tends to be the one I always see on the memes. Him and has Willy Wonka. It's like, okay.
It's really funny. I mean, that one expression, that one moment in the movie, screenshot, is used to convey so much irony.
Yeah.
Whether it be personal, whether you're screwing around with some buddies, or if you have a political point to make, it's amazing. It really is. I mean, memes really are our contemporary way of communicating with one another. It's amazing. And I don't think memes get enough credit. This phenomena doesn't get enough credit. So that's why we have that meme contest on there.
Okay, I looked it up real quick. The word meme originated from Richard Dawkins, who's an author. And really, to tell you the truth, and it shows it on the Wikipedia page, the first meme they consider is the infamous Kilroy Was Here thing, where they put that in the ships when they're welding, and somebody would draw a picture and it says Kilroy Was Here. That was the first time that was kind of what they considered a meme. So the Kilroy Award would actually sound pretty cool in terms of what it is. But from all intents and purposes, the word actually came from Richard Dawkins on that as well. So yeah, I'll have to look that up and see if he'd be willing. I don't know if he's still alive or not. Maybe he might be. I'll double check. But he was the one who came up with the phrase. So let's see. I believe he is. Yeah, I believe he's still alive. So you might have to ask him that. So yeah, interesting. I was going to mention, I'm going to go back to you talking, about innovation and all that is in smart devices and all that as well, because you were talking about online, an online presence, and we're seeing a lot more of that with places like Hulu and Netflix, and we're seeing a lot more people getting unwired is what they're calling it now. In terms of getting their content online versus having to go through a cable box or a satellite dish. It's kind of an interesting, and it's especially considering the amount of content that's out there right now. It's an interesting situation. I was able to talk to somebody. I was at Sundance a couple years ago, and I talked to somebody about this, and I'd actually asked about if a show like Breaking Bad would have made it in say the 80s or the 90s, and one of the guys who happens to be the head of programming over at A&E had said the answer to the question is no, because the ratings would have been too low, because back then there were so many limited stations in order to have it, so the threshold for a show to be on a network has lowered since then. But let me get your opinion on online content, how all this is affecting the world. Obviously, I said a lot more people are getting their content online. But what's your take on what's going on right now in the world in terms of content and being able to watch content?
Yeah, I mean, I think over the last decade, we've seen a paradigm shift in the old adage of content is king. Content is no longer really king. It's really the pipeline, as people are demanding convenience and they want to be selective with how they get and are able to access their content. There are so many different ways for people to get what it is they are looking for. They don't have to be put in a box. I guess no pun intended. You get these cable boxes now. For the last 30 years, and you're going to see cable companies try to scramble to figure out new business models to stay in business, because more people are going to Netflix and Hulu, and they don't have cable subscriptions. They'd rather pay $15 a month for Netflix as opposed to getting 200 channels through a cable provider and not getting what it is they're looking for. So, you're getting more selective, preferred, channels, and it's on an individual basis, which I think is fantastic. I mean, I think I have like 2,000 channels my cable provider gives me, and I think I only watch maybe 3, so I'm overpaying.
exactly. I was listening to Chael Sonnen's podcast this past week, and Front Row Brian, who's a regular guest on his show, had mentioned that there's a study that only out of 200 channels that we could possibly have, a lot of people only watch 17 on average. So you are kind of overpaying, and it's nice to be, you know, kind of a buffet and pick and choose what you want to watch versus having to pay for, you know, what you don't need as well. And also the fact that there's more, it can be riskier now, I think, because mm-hmm. a lot of times, especially with the major networks, that you're kind of restrained a little bit because you're kind of catering to certain aspect. There are certain things that you can't do on television that, you know, they get up in arms about as well. But we're seeing that other sources, you know, some of the premium cable channels and like Netflix and Hulu are taking bigger risks in terms of that, and the content providers are given more artistic freedom as well. I mean, and obviously your festival is absolutely the same situation where, you know, these guys are,
yep.
are given a platform in order to show their creative arc without any restraints.
Yeah, I mean, once upon a time there were a handful of networks, and you had to abide by their restraints. And now you don't have to do that. I mean, if a major network doesn't like your content, you know, it's not the end of the world. You have like 100 other outlets that you can go to, and you could bring your content to. So it fosters creativity, is what it does, I feel. So you're going to see a lot more higher-level programming than you would have seen before. And there is. I think there's a lot more, you know, great programming now than there ever was before. I can't keep up with it. You know, I mean, I've never seen an episode of The Walking Dead, but it's a great show. And then one day I'm going to sit down, I'm going to binge watch it. And I'm going to be able to binge watch it because it's going to be available to me.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't watched Walking Dead either. I admit that. People have been prodding me to watch Game of Thrones. I finally got a couple episodes. I'm still trying to figure out the plot. It's really, really tough to figure that out.
I can't hang with that show, man. I can't watch it. I tried to get into it. You know, everybody's saying it's cool or whatever, and I like a good battle scene, so I thought this will be cool. And the incest weirded me out, and like, I don't know, I just couldn't really cut through the accent either. It was just weird.
Well, you know, for me, it's just I can't get into plots, but there's so many plots going on that I can't grasp what's going on. I almost want them to re-edit this and do one parallel storyline per character, so we know what everything's going on. So it was hard for me to get into it, and it still is. I mean, I watched the episode because everybody was like, "Oh, this is the best episode ever." It was a pretty good episode, but I'm still trying to figure out who's warring who, who's who, and all that as well. So sometimes you have to binge watch stuff like that. Chelsea, have you ever binge watched at all?
Oh yeah. Well, it's old school, but I would had binge watch Friends a lot because I grew up watching that, and I love it. And, you know, that was kind of pre all that going on. I think that's when people started binge watching, is when you could get like whole seasons or whole series worth of shows, and then just start watching stuff, and then it's progressed from there. But yeah, I can get into a binge watch for sure.
Yeah, I binge watched a Breaking Bad right before the season finale, so I just watched it all day. They had an all day marathon of all the episodes, which I ended up loving. I never got into it until like right when the last episode. So, I think that's the thing to think about too. You know, I think a lot of people are thinking ahead towards doing a lot of these shows. I mean, I think Lifetime's been progressive with Unreal, where they've have a lot of their content online for the series already. They have most of the episodes already online, so people can binge watch online. While if they want to watch it regularly on television, they can watch it on television as well. And some of the other networks are doing that as well. So it's an interesting situation, to say the least. But I really hope people get to binge watch the Fanboy Film Festival, because that's all next month, and you guys get to vote on who gets. Cash prize of $10,000 for the feature, $10,000 for the short. So you guys can binge watch there as well. So I'm interested to see some of these things, and I may drop one or two of my films in the hat there too. into the festival, because I know the fans are going to be the ones that vote on who ends up winning this, which is a very unique thing, I think, in terms of the festivals, to say the least. To say that the fans have a voice, and they're the ones that they get to say, okay, who gets this $10,000? Who did the best job? I think it's going to be a very interesting It's a very interesting scenario in terms of it's very unique in terms of the film festival industry.
Yeah, we'd love to have your film be part of the festival. But remember, you only have till Friday to submit. So I would suggest
Don't
that
worry.
You
I already have
that.
A copy. It's just I have to upload. I will definitely do that.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I mean, this is a completely different model on the whole film festival take. So we'll see how this all pans out over the next couple weeks. You know, we got 2 months here, and I'm hoping people come on. I mean, hey, if you want to see content and at your own leisure, it's the best way to do it. It's just you go on there. There's no cost. Just go on there. You like something, watch it. If you don't, stop. Go on, move on to something else. We've got over 800 titles on there. So, you know, it'll keep you busy.
Yeah, now there isn't any restriction in terms of if something was in a film festival before or was released on YouTube or anything like that. So it's basically open to anybody, right?
Yep. Yep. No restrictions there.
Good to know. Yep. So I mean, it's going to be great. I'll have to take an afternoon and just binge watch some of the episodes as well. And hopefully next year we'll get some more. You know, maybe that number will double or whatever as soon as we start getting some of this publicity out as well. But I encourage everybody to go to fanboyfilmfestival.com over the next couple weeks, even if you have a couple minutes, just to watch a couple films that you might be interested in and vote. Like I said, some of these filmmakers get as much as $10,000. If you have a meme, make up your own meme generator, that's $1,000. That's $1,000 in your pocket if you end up winning that one. So make sure you guys definitely check that out as well. Are you on social media at all?
We have a Facebook page, and we have a Twitter and an Instagram account. So, you know?
Yeah. So look at Fanboy Film Festival on any of those social medias as well. Chelsea, you have any other questions?
No, I don't believe so. I think it's cool what y'all are doing. You know, it's you're definitely on the ahead of the curve. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, like I said, I really look forward to it. I really look forward to see who all wins when some of these stuff. Maybe we'll get you back on when the winners are announced. And best of luck to you in the festival, and we'll hopefully talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, not a problem at all, well, Michael, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks. Take care.
Yeah,
bye.
Bye.
That was Michael from the Fanboy Film Festival, fanboyfilmfestival.com. If you have a movie, that is ready to upload like I do, please go to that site, upload it by Friday, and then you can get people to vote for your movie. So definitely looking forward to that. And I got to figure out which one I want to do. I don't know if I want to do my documentary or I want to do my feature that I did last year. I think I might do my feature that I did last year. Might be a little bit easier on there, and it's a feature, and it might be a little bit easier, but we'll see. Chelsea, definitely a pleasure to have you on as a co-host again. Hope you had a fun time.
I did. Thank you so much for having me again.
No problem at all. Best of luck to you. Hopefully we'll get a fight announcement out of you at some point as well, and we'll see what kind of goes on there in terms of that. Fingers crossed on that. So hopefully we'll get down there as well. And we'll definitely have you back on to co-host a couple times. I'm going to start to do these shows a lot more often, making a lot of requests for guests to be on the show as well. So, we'll have to line up again at some point. But I always appreciate you being a co-host for me and all that as well. So.
Well, I'd love to be here. Thank you.
No problem. I want to mention the next time we'll be live on air, it will be July because July next week is July 4th. I will not have a show. July 11th will be the next time we'll be live on the show. We'll have singer Eddie Mann on with us, as well as, let me see here, I'm trying to find the other person we're going to have on. Actor, I believe it'll be, double check here. It's an actor of some sort. I had to figure out who it was. Let's see here. Actor Duavi Bali, I believe is how it's pronounced his name. So I'll have an actor and a singer coming up on July the 11th. We're going to start doing the shows a little more on Monday, so just look out for that as well. Same time, 1 p.m. Pacific. I know I've been doing them on Wednesdays, but since my work shifted, it's down to Mondays now. So we'll be doing back on Mondays again, so make sure you guys check that as well. I should hopefully have VegasPodcasting.com updated at some point, where we'll have all the old interviews as well, so make sure you guys check that out as well. With that in mind, we'll see you guys in 2 weeks on July 11th at 1 p.m. Pacific. Here on Somewhere in Vegas. We'll talk to you soon. We'll talk to you guys soon. And we'll talk to you later, Chelsea.
All right. Bye.